Well, Bruce Williamson is from Rail Future, joins me now. Bruce, good morning.
Good morning, James.
Are we getting good value from our rail system?
No, quite simply. You know, it's outrageous that fares keep going up above inflation every year. And of course, you've picked up on the root cause of this. The government insists on using RPI, which is usually the higher measure of inflation. No one uses it for anything else anymore. The government claims it prefers CPI, which is usually lower. But of course, when it comes to rail fares, they go for the higher one.
But we've heard the answer to that, and the answer to that is that the wage salary increases are dealt with by RPI as well. The unions will not accept moving to CPI.
Well, the problem is though that the proportion of industry costs that are down to wages is certainly less than 100%. So even if wages do go up by RPI, that doesn't mean that industry costs go up by RPI. They go up by considerably less. And the other issue to consider as well is how the government treats the motorist. There's quite a contrast with rail fuel duty, which has been frozen for, I think, nearly 10 years now. So the government can afford to take the hit and absorb the cost of not putting up the price of petrol. So I think it's perfectly reasonable that it does the same for the poor old rail traveller.
Well, hang on a second. The petrol prices, 70% pretty much of every litre of petrol you put in to your tank is taxed, combined with the fact that taxation on cars has gone up considerably as a result of the changes in the amount of tax that is paid per car user, given what we've seen in those changes. So I'm not sure that you can compare and contrast the two, can you?
Well, I think you can. I mean, obviously, the whole issue of taxation is a bit of a sort of a hot potato, and you'll hear, you know, different claims from different sides. But nonetheless, it remains the case that the government is absorbing an increasing chunk of the cost of motoring, and they're not prepared to do the same for rail passengers. And I just don't see how they can, you know, do that with a straight face, frankly.
Well, it's not that they're doing that. It's if you actually compare the amount of revenue that comes in from the motorists via all the tax that they pay on all the various things that they pay, VAT on all of their car purchases, which is tax. They'll pay VAT on all the servicing and the tyres and the engineering works that they have. That's tax. They'll pay VAT on the fuel, and then they'll pay the fuel duty, which is tax. They'll pay the tolls on some of the roads where there are tolls. That's tax. They'll pay local parking charges, which is tax. So there's a lot of tax which is paid, and arguably that tax doesn't come through to the road network. I think you may be onto the wrong kind of metric. What we should be talking about, surely, is if we want to have a rail system that operates in a way that is appropriate, then we've got to have more money going into it. But also, who should be paying for that? Should the person who uses the rail pay for it, or should the nation pay for it as an investment?
Well, it's certainly true that, you know, you get what you pay for. And if you want a decent railway, one way or another, you've got to pay for it. But, I mean, the odds are very much stacked against the railways. You know, for instance, the railways have to absorb the cost of the British Transport Police, and yet the road network doesn't pay for the cost of its policing. You know, the rail industry has to pay business rates on railway stations, and yet, you know, the road industry doesn't pay rates on motorway junctions. So, you know, the odds are very much stacked in favour of the road user and against the railway. But this issue of, you know, we've heard it often said, well, you know, the rail users should pay for it because they're the ones who benefit. But no, everyone benefits from a decent rail network. It reduces congestion on the roads. It reduces pollution. It's a great driver of economic growth. And a city the size of London simply couldn't function without a rail network. So everyone benefits from it. And, you know, I think that means that there's a very strong case for a degree of public subsidy.
And do you think, though, that do we need a step change in how our rails and services are provided? Because I think, look, we've got some incredible infrastructure. Some of our railway stations, some of the newer ones, really are places of beauty, and I'm incredibly impressed by them. Some of the things that we've managed to achieve through public-private partnerships where real estate development has taken place, and that's provided some money towards providing better stations. And certainly when Crossrail does finally open, if and when, but when it does finally open, I think we're going to have some incredible infrastructure there. Having said that, what seems to be really falling short are local stations up and down the country away from big major cities. and local commuter networks, and also the trains and the quality of trains that seems to be very poor in comparison to many countries around the world.
So yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, do you want a step change? Yes, of course we do. We want to wave a magic wand and make these improvements, but we're playing catch up. You know, from decades and decades of underinvestment in the railway. And you know, obviously you can't turn around that super tanker in an instant. But yeah, we need, you know, we need a rolling program of electrification. We need ongoing. What we need is sustained long-term investment. Well, the real problem that the railways have suffered from is feast and famine. And it's happening again now. Obviously there are, you know, great schemes. You mentioned Crossrail, but I think it's important that we don't forget the less glamorous things like, you know, getting rid of Pacers and those sort of improvements to small, less glamorous stations, I think are equally needed. We shouldn't make it an either or thing.
Now, there is a bit of me that says that, I would like to see some glamour brought back to our railways. Now, you might say that that's a little bit classist, a little bit elitist. That having been said, there is a romance, if you like, about railway travel that seems to have gone. And it seems to have gone because we never provide a different kind of service for, maybe it's during the day or leisure passengers or those who are going to travel for different reasons. We're driven by the commuter market, and I understand that that's got to do a job and that can be more utilitarian. Wouldn't we or should we try to work out how do we, for example, persuade people that when they go on holiday, if they, for example, take a staycation, do take the train, make it easy for people to take larger amounts of luggage, make it easier for people to pick up, you know, whether it's cars or something else at the other end, make it easier for people to be able to travel around and use the network more effectively off-peak, because that's one of the reasons that it's so unprofitable, is that we gear it up to do our commuter work, and then the rest of the time, it's traveling at way less than capacity.
Well, you're absolutely right, but that's a problem for the railways across the world, really. Now, people want to get to work, you know, 8 o'clock in the morning and go home at 5 o'clock, and that's when, you know, everyone wants to use the railway. So that's why we have, you know, one of the reasons why we have a sort of bizarre, complex fare structure, because the rail industry is doing its best to price us off the busy trains and onto off-peak trains. And you know, they will point out quite rightly that there are some bargains to be had if you book in advance and go on an off-peak train. You can get, you know, a day return to Aberdeen for Thruppence Halfpenny. But, of course, if you want to go in during rush hour, it will cost you the price of a small house. Glamour on the railways. Well, you know, this is the problem, of course. You know, it comes back to this issue of capacity. And, you know, the rail industry has to cram in as many passengers as possible on limited rolling stock it's got to get those people moved. And of course, that means, you know, you're paying the price with legroom and ambiance. But there's still first class if you can afford that.
Well, there is. Whether or not it's really first class is another matter for another day. But let's see whether the government really take this up. If there was one thing that Grant Shapps should do, he's all over the media today. He'll be on every single station talking about whatever he's talking about. One thing put at the top of his to-do list, what would it be?
I think you've got to ditch RPI. There's just no justification for this, for, you know, ripping people off more and more and more each year. And it's not sustainable. It cannot go on.
I appreciate you saying that, and I appreciate him having clarified why it is that they're not going to do that. So that's obviously the issue. Ditch RPI, says Bruce Williamson of Rail Future, whereas the minister has already said, no, we can't, because we're hamstrung by the unions. Really? But you are the minister. Let's find out some more about that, I'm sure.